You're staring at a stack of papers at the kitchen table at 2 in the morning, and you can't remember if you've already paid that property tax bill or if it's still buried somewhere in the pile. You texted your sister 3 days ago about the estate attorney's question, and she still hasn't responded. If you're lying awake at night wondering whether you've missed a critical deadline, if you're getting conflicting advice from the lawyer, the accountant, and your uncle who went through this before, if you're avoiding phone calls because you don't know how to answer questions about things you've never heard of, if you're second-guessing every decision because one mistake could cost the estate thousands of dollars or get you personally sued, if you're feeling guilty that you're not grieving properly because you're too busy drowning in paperwork, if your own family responsibilities are suffering because this estate work has consumed every spare moment, if you've snapped at someone you love because you're so exhausted you can't think straight anymore, and if you're terrified that despite all this effort, you're somehow doing it wrong, you're not alone and you're not failing. You're facing a system that wasn't designed to be navigated by normal people during one of the hardest times of their lives. You've probably tried making lists and spreadsheets, organizing everything into folders by category. You've Googled executor duties and felt more confused after reading 7 different websites that all say slightly different things. You've asked your estate attorney questions and gotten answers that use terms you don't understand, but you nodded anyway because you didn't want to seem incompetent. You've bought a book about estate settlement that's sitting on your nightstand, but you're so exhausted by the end of each day that you can't absorb anything more complicated than a grocery list. You've tried dividing tasks with your siblings, which either created more communication problems or left you doing everything anyway because it was easier than coordinating. You've attempted to tackle everything at once, thinking that working harder would help you catch up, but you just ended up more behind and more overwhelmed. None of this worked because the problem isn't your effort or your intelligence. The problem is that you're trying to assemble something incredibly complex without being able to see how all the pieces connect. In the next hour, I'm going to show you a completely different approach. You're going to discover the Estate Navigation Matrix, a system that gives you clarity about what needs to happen in what order and what you can safely ignore or delay. You'll learn exactly which decisions need professional help and which ones you can handle yourself with confidence. You'll understand how to protect yourself legally while actually making progress instead of just spinning your wheels. And you'll get a framework that works even when your brain is foggy with grief, even when family dynamics are complicated, and even when you're being pulled in 17 directions at once. But here's what I need from you. This system only works if you commit to listening all the way through. The pieces build on each other, and if you skip around, you'll miss the connections that make everything click into place. So find a quiet spot, silence your phone, and give yourself this hour. You've been carrying this weight alone for too long. Let's fix that right now. You've been named executor, and if you're like most people, the first thing you did was search online for executor checklist, or maybe you called the estate attorney your aunt recommended. You printed out a to-do list. You started making phone calls. You felt like you were handling it. But here's what nobody tells you. Most executor advice only addresses the surface of what you're dealing with. These checklists tell you to notify creditors and inventory assets and file the will with probate court, but they don't tell you that notifying creditors in the wrong order can expose the estate to unnecessary claims, or that inventorying assets before understanding tax implications can lock you into valuations that cost the heirs thousands, or that some states have different filing deadlines depending on whether the deceased owned property in multiple counties. The standard advice treats estate settlement like it's a linear process, step one, step two, step three, when in reality, it's a three-dimensional puzzle where the order of operations determines whether you protect the estate or accidentally expose it to liability. You can follow every item on a checklist and still make mistakes that won't reveal themselves until months later when you get a letter from the IRS or when a beneficiary's attorney contacts you about a breach of fiduciary duty you didn't even know you were committing. but the incomplete approach is only part of the problem.
The real issue is that the entire system is working against you from day one. Think about it. The probate court doesn't care that you're grieving. They have filing deadlines that start counting the moment of death, whether you know about them or not. The financial institutions freeze accounts and demand medallion signature guarantees and original death certificates, plural, because one certified copy somehow isn't enough for the three different departments that need it. The insurance companies have their own claim windows, the IRS has their forms and schedules, the state taxing authority has different forms and different schedules. Every single entity operates on its own timeline with its own requirements, and none of them coordinate with each other. You're not dealing with a single system. You're dealing with 17 different systems that all assume you already know how to navigate them. And here's the cruelest part. These systems are designed for professionals who do this work every day, not for a grieving daughter who just lost her father and is trying to figure out what a disclaimant beneficiary is while also planning a funeral. The system doesn't adjust for your grief. It doesn't slow down. It doesn't simplify. It just keeps moving. And if you miss a deadline or file the wrong form or make an election you can't reverse, the consequences fall entirely on you. So what do most people do? They push through. They force themselves to focus. They tell themselves, I just need to power through this. And they start making decisions quickly because there's so much pressure to keep things moving. But here's what makes the situation so insidious. When you try to force clarity during grief, you actually make it worse. Your brain is already operating in survival mode, running on cortisol and adrenaline, and when you push harder, you trigger something psychologists call cognitive tunneling. Your focus narrows to whatever seems most urgent in the moment, and you lose the ability to see connections between decisions. You handle the immediate crisis in front of you without realizing it's creating two more crises downstream. You pay the funeral expenses from the wrong account. You distribute personal property before checking if any of it was specifically bequeathed in the will. You file for probate before realizing there was a trust that could have avoided it entirely. The pressure to act quickly creates the exact conditions that lead to costly mistakes. And because you're checking things off your list, you feel productive. You feel like you're being responsible. You don't realize you're making errors until it's too late to fix them. And this brings us to what's really happening, something I call the estate navigation matrix. And I want to start by sharing something that might feel like a weight lifting off your shoulders. You don't need to become an expert in probate law, tax codes, or estate administration. You don't need to memorize hundreds of rules or understand every nuance of the legal system. What you actually need is something much simpler and infinitely more practical, a system that tells you the right thing to do next, prevents costly mistakes you don't even know exist, and works even when you're too overwhelmed to think clearly. This is the insight that changes everything for executors. Most people assume they're struggling because they don't know enough. They buy books, they Google frantically at 2 in the morning, they lie awake wondering if they've missed something crucial. But knowledge isn't actually the problem. The problem is that estate settlement isn't a knowledge challenge, it's a navigation challenge. You're trying to move through a complex process during one of the most difficult periods of your life, and what you need isn't more information, it's clear direction about what comes next. Think about assembling a complex grandfather clock while standing in a room filled with smoke. You can see individual gears and springs scattered in front of you, but you can't see how they connect or what order they go in. Some pieces look identical but aren't interchangeable. There's no instruction manual, and the smoke makes you forget which pieces you've already installed. Even worse, if you force the wrong gear into a slot that looks right, the clock might appear assembled but will never actually work. That's what settling an estate feels like without a proper system. The estate navigation matrix works like a ventilation system that clears the smoke, then provides a transparent overlay showing exactly which piece goes where, in what order, with guardrails preventing you from forcing the wrong gear into the wrong slot. It doesn't require you to understand clockmaking, it just guides you, step by step, until the job is done correctly. The system is built around 5 sequential phases that form a protective framework for the entire process. We call it the CLEAR method: catalog, lock, evaluate, align, and release. Each letter represents a distinct phase, and here's what makes this approach different from the advice you'll get from most attorneys or the generic checklists you'll find online. First, it's sequential. You can't skip ahead without creating problems, and the system won't let you. Second, it's complete at each phase. You'll know exactly when you finished one phase and you're ready to move to the next. And third, it's designed for your mental state right now, not for some hypothetical version of you who has unlimited energy and perfect focus. Let me walk you through each phase so you can see exactly how this works in practice. The first phase is catalog, and this is where we document all assets, debts, and legal documents using the Asset Discovery Checklist. Now, I know this sounds obvious. Of course, you need to find everything. But here's what most people miss. The catalog phase isn't just about listing what you already know exists. It's about systematically discovering what you don't know exists. And this matters more than almost anything else you'll do as executor, because you can't protect assets you don't know about. You can't pay debts you haven't discovered. And in some cases, assets that aren't properly claimed within specific timeframes are simply forfeited. Here's how this works. The Asset Discovery Checklist is organized by discovery method, not by asset type. Most people approach this wrong. They think, okay, I'll look for bank accounts, then I'll look for retirement accounts, then I'll look for life insurance. But this approach misses things because many assets don't fit neat categories or aren't labeled clearly. Instead, the checklist walks you through 6 discovery methods: mail analysis, document forensics, digital archaeology, institution canvassing, public record search, and relationship interviews. Mail analysis means you're collecting and examining all physical and digital mail for a full 60-day period minimum. You're not just looking for account statements, you're looking for any communication from any financial institution, government agency, or service provider. That property tax bill from a county you didn't know your father owned property in, that dividend statement from a company you've never heard of, that annual notice from a storage facility that might contain valuables. Document forensics is where you examine every financial document from the past 3 years, and you're specifically looking for patterns in deposits and withdrawals. A monthly deposit might indicate a pension or annuity you didn't know about. A quarterly withdrawal might point to a required minimum distribution from a retirement account that isn't in the obvious places. You're reading old tax returns not just for the accounts listed, but for the story they tell about income sources and asset sales. Digital archaeology means you're recovering browser histories, email accounts, password managers, and digital file systems. You're looking for confirmations of online accounts, digital assets like cryptocurrency wallets, automated bill payments that indicate ongoing subscriptions or services, and saved documents that reference assets or debts. Many executors discover significant assets in the Important Documents folder on a computer that family members didn't even know existed. Institution canvassing is your systematic outreach to every financial institution, insurance company, and benefits administrator that might hold assets. This includes writing to any institution where you found evidence of a past relationship, even if you don't see current statements. That bank your mother used 40 years ago might still have a dormant account with her maiden name on it. That employer she worked for in the 1980s might have an unclaimed pension benefit. The public record search covers unclaimed property databases in every state the deceased ever lived in or worked in, property records in every county they might have owned real estate, and court records that might indicate lawsuit settlements or judgments. And relationship interviews mean you're talking to the deceased's accountant, attorney, financial advisor, closest friends, and former business partners. You're not just asking what they know about. You're asking what the deceased talked about, worried about, or mentioned in passing. Now, here's a real scenario that shows why this matters. Margaret was settling her father's estate. She found his bank accounts, his house, his car, the obvious things. She was ready to move forward. But when she ran through the asset discovery checklist, the mail analysis revealed quarterly statements from a company she didn't recognize. It turned out to be a small investment account worth $83,000. The document forensics showed a pattern of annual deposits to an account that wasn't in his current bank statements. Some investigation revealed he'd switched banks 5 years earlier, but never closed the old account, which now held $17,000. And the digital archaeology recovered an email confirmation for a life insurance policy through his former employer that none of the family knew existed, ultimately paying out $250,000. Without the systematic checklist, Margaret would have overlooked over $350,000 in assets. Once you've completed the catalog phase, and only once you've completed it, you move to lock. This is where you secure time-sensitive actions and critical deadlines using the deadline defense calendar. The lock phase exists because estate settlement is filled with deadlines that don't announce themselves and can't be extended. Miss a deadline to file for certain benefits, and that money is simply gone forever. Miss a deadline to contest a claim, and you might be personally liable for a debt the estate doesn't actually owe. Miss a deadline to elect a particular tax treatment, and you could cost the beneficiaries tens of thousands of dollars. The deadline defense calendar is not a regular calendar. It's a deadline mapping system that works backward from consequences. Here's what I mean. When you identify an asset or a requirement during the catalog phase, the system immediately identifies every associated deadline and maps them in order of irreversibility. Some deadlines are hard stops. Miss them, and the opportunity is permanently gone. Others are soft stops. You face penalties, but can still take action. The system prioritizes hard stops and builds in multiple layers of advanced warning. For example, let's say you've identified that the deceased was receiving Social Security benefits. The moment that information enters the system, it flags immediate actions. Notify Social Security within 30 days, return any benefits paid for the month of death, apply for survivor benefits within the appropriate window, and determine if any overpayments create estate debts. Each of these has a different deadline and a different consequence for missing it. The system doesn't just tell you the deadline. It tells you exactly what to do, exactly when to do it, and exactly what documentation you'll need to have ready. Or consider retirement accounts. These have some of the most complex and unforgiving deadline structures in estate administration. Depending on the account type, the beneficiary designation, and the beneficiary's relationship to the deceased, there might be required minimum distributions that must be taken by December 31st of the year of death. There might be elections to treat an inherited IRA in a particular way that must be made by September 30th of the year following death. Miss these deadlines, and the tax consequences can be catastrophic. The deadline defense calendar identifies these high-stakes deadlines the moment you document the retirement account during catalog, and it builds in alerts at 6 months out, 3 months out, 1 month out, and 2 weeks out. The evaluate phase comes third, and this is where we assess tax implications and distribution options with the decision tree analyzer. This is the phase where most executors make expensive mistakes, not because they're careless, but because they don't realize there are choices to be made. They assume there's one right way to handle each asset and move forward without understanding that different approaches have dramatically different outcomes for the beneficiaries. The Decision Tree Analyzer works by presenting you with every major decision point in the estate settlement process and walking you through the implications of each option before you commit to a path. It's called a tree because each decision branches into multiple possibilities, and each branch has different tax consequences, different timing implications, and different effects on beneficiaries. Let's take a common scenario. The estate includes a house worth $400,000 with a remaining mortgage of $150,000. There are three adult children who are equal beneficiaries. Now, most executors assume the path forward is obvious: sell the house, pay off the mortgage, split the proceeds. But the decision tree analyzer reveals there are actually at least 8 different approaches, each with distinct outcomes. Option 1, sell immediately and distribute cash. This is simple and creates equal distributions, but if the real estate market is currently depressed, you're locking in a loss. Option 2, one child buys out the other two at appraised value. This keeps the property in the family and can have favorable tax treatment, but requires that child to qualify for financing and can create family tension if not handled properly. Option 3, transfer the house to all three children as tenants in common. This defers the sale decision but creates ongoing shared ownership that can lead to disputes. Option 4, transfer to one child with the mortgage and adjust that child's inheritance accordingly. This works if one child wants the property and the estate has sufficient other assets to equalize distributions. Each of these options has different tax implications for capital gains, different impacts on the estate's liquidity for paying other debts, different timelines for when beneficiaries receive their inheritances, and different potentials for family conflict. The decision tree analyzer doesn't tell you which choice is right, because that depends on your specific situation. Instead, it ensures you see all the options and understand the consequences before you make an irreversible choice. The fourth phase is align, where you coordinate stakeholders, professionals, and institutions using the stakeholder communication protocol. This phase is about preventing the conflicts, misunderstandings, and legal disputes that derail estate settlements and destroy family relationships. Because here's the truth about most estate conflicts: they're not really about money. They're about feeling excluded, uninformed, or treated unfairly during a process that's already emotionally charged. The stakeholder communication protocol operates on three principles: transparency of process, regular updates regardless of progress, and documented decisions with explained rationale. This means every beneficiary receives the same information at the same time. It means you communicate on a set schedule, even when there's nothing new to report, because silence creates anxiety, and anxiety creates suspicion. And it means when you make decisions, particularly discretionary ones, you document why you chose that path and share that reasoning. Here's how this prevents problems. You're the executor and you've decided to hire an estate sale company to handle the personal property rather than letting family members take individual items. This is a reasonable decision. It's efficient, it's fair, and it removes the emotional difficulty of assigning value to items with sentimental meaning. But if you just announce, "I've hired an estate sale company and everything will be sold next month," you're creating the conditions for conflict. One sibling feels you've unilaterally eliminated their chance to have something meaningful. Another feels you're being cold and mercenary about mom's belongings. The stakeholder communication protocol has you communicate this differently. You send a message to all beneficiaries. "I need to make a decision about the personal property. I've identified three approaches. Option 1, hold an estate sale and divide the proceeds equally. Option 2, let family members identify items they'd like, agree on values, and offset against inheritances. Option 3, invite family members to take items they want with no accounting, then sell what remains." Each option has different implications for capital gains, different impacts on the estate's liquidity for paying other debts, different timelines for when beneficiaries receive their inheritances, and different potentials for family conflict. The final phase is release, where you execute distributions and close the estate using the final settlement sequence. This is where everything comes together, but it's also where executors often stumble at the finish line by rushing through final steps without proper documentation or legal protection. The final settlement sequence is a specific order of operations that ensures you can close the estate completely and walk away with legal protection and peace of mind. The sequence begins with final creditor clearance, where you verify that all legitimate debts have been paid and all creditor claim periods have expired.
Then comes tax closure, where you file all required tax returns and obtain evidence that no additional taxes are owed. Next is beneficiary accounting, where you provide a complete financial accounting of everything that came into the estate and everything that went out. Then preliminary distributions, where you distribute assets while retaining a reserve for any final unexpected expenses. After a waiting period for final claims, you move to final distributions and estate closure, where you distribute the reserve, obtain receipts and releases from all beneficiaries, file final accountings with the court if required, and obtain your formal discharge as executor. Most executors want to skip straight to distributing everything and being done. But if you distribute all assets and then discover an unpaid debt or a tax liability, you might be personally responsible for covering it. The final settlement sequence protects you by ensuring nothing can come back to haunt you after you've closed the estate. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. This sounds comprehensive, but isn't it also overwhelming? Don't I still need to know a lot to execute each phase? And what if my situation is complicated? What if there are disputes? What if I'm already behind and I've been serving as executor for months without a system? Here's what makes the estate navigation matrix different. Each phase includes not just what to do, but the exact tools that do the thinking for you. The asset discovery checklist doesn't say find all assets. It gives you specific sources to check, specific questions to ask, and it's literally organized as checkboxes you complete one by one. The deadline defense calendar doesn't require you to know which deadlines apply. You answer questions about the asset or situation, and it tells you which deadlines you're facing. The decision tree analyzer doesn't assume you understand tax implications. It presents choices in plain language and shows you the outcomes of each path. And if you're already partway through the process, the system meets you where you are. You can enter at whatever phase matches your current situation. If you've already cataloged assets but haven't secured deadlines, you start at lock. If you've been serving for months but haven't made distribution decisions, you start at evaluate. The phases are sequential for a complete estate settlement, but they're also modular for executors who need to course correct midstream. What about disputes? The system actually prevents most disputes before they start, through the align phase. But when conflicts do arise, the stakeholder communication protocol includes specific templates for addressing common disputes: beneficiaries who disagree about asset distribution, family members who claim promised items, challenges to your decisions as executor. These templates give you language that diffuses tension while protecting your legal position. Why does this work when so many executors struggle despite good intentions? Because the estate navigation matrix is designed around how your brain actually functions during grief and overwhelm, not around some idealized version of how estate settlement should work. It gives you clear next steps instead of requiring you to figure out the big picture. It prevents errors through structure rather than relying on your memory or judgment, and it provides proof of your diligence, which protects you legally and emotionally when people question your decisions. Thousands of executors have used this system to navigate estate settlements that initially seemed impossible. They've avoided mistakes that would have cost beneficiaries substantial money. They've preserved family relationships through transparent processes, and they've completed the work with confidence that they fulfilled their duties completely and correctly, allowing them to finally grieve without the weight of legal responsibility hanging over them. This is the framework that transforms you from an overwhelmed executor into someone who's successfully navigating a complex responsibility one clear step at a time. So, now you understand how the estate navigation matrix works. You've seen how breaking down this enormous responsibility into clear quadrants, legal structure, asset inventory, stakeholder communication, and financial settlement, transforms chaos into manageable steps. You know that the trusted steward doesn't have to know everything from the start. They just need a system that reveals the next right action. But understanding the system and actually becoming that confident executor are two different things.
Knowledge without action just adds to the overwhelm. So let's talk about exactly what you're going to do next, starting right now, while you're still listening to this. Right now, I want you to do something incredibly simple. Before this ends, before you move on to whatever's next in your day, open the Notes app on your phone or grab whatever piece of paper is nearby. Write down these four words: legal, assets, people, money. That's it. Those are your four quadrants. You now have the beginning of your estate navigation matrix. This isn't busy work. This is you claiming your new identity as someone who has a system, someone who's in control. You're no longer the person drowning in paperwork and confusion. You're the trusted steward with a clear path forward. Today, within the next few hours, you're going to populate just one of those quadrants. Choose legal structure to start, because it determines everything else. Under that heading, write down three things: the location of the will, the name of the estate attorney you've spoken with or need to contact, and which court you'll need to file with. If you don't know these answers yet, write the questions. The power isn't in having all the answers immediately. The power is in defining what you need to know. You've just taken the fog of, I don't even know where to start, and turned it into three specific answerable questions. Tomorrow, you're going to spend 15 minutes on your estate navigation matrix quadrant. Walk through the house or review your loved one's files and list just five assets. Not every asset, just five. The house, the primary bank account, the car, the retirement account, the life insurance policy. Whatever you can identify easily. You're building momentum, not trying to complete the entire inventory in one session. The trusted steward knows that consistency beats perfection. Over the rest of this week, you're going to touch your estate navigation matrix every single day for at least 15 minutes. Monday might be calling that attorney. Tuesday could be sending the first email to beneficiaries explaining your timeline. Wednesday might be requesting account statements. Thursday could be researching probate requirements for your state. What you'll discover is that the system starts guiding you. When you look at your matrix, the gaps become obvious and the next action reveals itself. You're no longer paralyzed by the enormity of the task because you're not looking at the whole mountain anymore. You're just taking the next step your system shows you. 30 days from now, picture this version of yourself. You filed the initial probate documents or confirmed they're not needed. You have a working spreadsheet of all major assets with their approximate values. The beneficiaries aren't calling you with anxious questions because you've been proactively updating them every week. You've identified which assets transfer automatically and which require court approval. You've opened the estate bank account and set up a simple tracking system. You're not finished, estate settlement takes months, but you're unmistakably in control. When people ask how you're managing everything, you'll calmly say, I have a system. Because you do. Here's what I want you to remember. You are the trusted steward. You don't need to be perfect. You don't need to know everything right now. You just need to work your system consistently. Every time you feel that overwhelm creeping back in, that's your signal to return to your matrix and ask, what's the next action in one of my four quadrants? The answer will always be there. And here's my final suggestion. Listen to this again in a week. You'll hear different things the second time because you'll be listening as someone who's already taken action. You'll catch details you missed. You'll find reassurance in parts that didn't register the first time. This isn't just information to consume once, it's a system to internalize. You've got this. Now go create that matrix.